Hey, sweet people. Welcome back to another episode of the Sweet Spot Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Zeus, and today we're going to talk about creative entrepreneurship, brand building, and design. My guest today has the ability to shape rooms and emotions with lighting. My guest today is Ben Rousseau, an award-winning lighting artist and product designer. Ben has over 20 years of experience. He founded Ben Rousseau Design, a studio specialized in high-end commercial venues, residencies, but also hospitality venues. I talked to Ben about his creative career, from humble beginnings in a cobblestone English small town to his educational steps, finding his purpose, his drive as a designer, as an artist, to where he is today, finding his sweet spot, building his company, realizing fantastic projects from Burning Man to ice hotels. If you watch this on YouTube, you can see during the interview, Ben has one of his artworks behind him on the wall. It's a so-called timepiece, and he talks about it a little bit. And you can, with this example, you can sense how much intention Ben puts in his work as an artist, as a designer, but also as an engineer and a craftsman. He's obsessing about details, about perfectionism, and at the same time, he's not a technical creative. It's all about intention, about purpose, about how people and spaces interact with his work. So I think this is very inspiring, and I hope you enjoy my talk to Ben Rousseau.
Welcome to The Sweet Side. This is the Sweet Spot Podcast with Mark Zeus, investigating entrepreneurship, purpose, and the creative life.
Hi, Ben. Welcome to the Sweet Spot Podcast, and thanks for taking the time to share your creative and entrepreneurial journey, both for you as a founder and a designer, I think, today.
Thanks, Mark. Nice to be here.
Nice. You're in England. You're in London right now. Is that correct?
I'm actually in Hove, which is down on the south coast. So
okay, cool. Kind of
directly south from London.
Alrighty. So summer is over on your end as well, right?
It's actually not too bad still right now. So we're holding on to it with both hands.
Oh, in Hamburg here, I can feel that 100%. You know, I want to bounce off a little theory right from the get-go, because I thought about what you do and the role lighting plays in our life and in our professional and personal life. And I wondered if England, similar to Berlin and Hamburg, is maybe a fantastic place to think about light and about light design, because you have a lot of rainy days, a lot of a longer dark season and everything. And I think that's a good starting point to maybe think about light, because quick disclaimer, I spent the summer in Italy, in Tuscany, in Puglia, where you have beautiful landscapes and beautiful lighting, but honestly, you don't find nice lighting inside, even in really beautiful trattorias in town and something. You often just have halogen spotlights on the ceiling, and that's it. You have brutal lighting, really ugly, hard lighting inside the rooms, compared to Denmark, Scandinavia, where you have the whole hygge idea of beautiful lighting and stuff like that. So can you relate to that? Is that something you can share?
Honestly, I'm going to say it's a huge thing that I discovered many years ago. And let's say it's not a secret weapon, but it's a thing that is just so powerful, and it's so transformative to a space. And so many people, they can't understand why a space feels so beautiful. And they are, you know, clients of mine are like, wow, we saw this house that you'd done and we just loved it. And we understood after a while, it was the lighting and the details and the layers and the way that the lighting worked with materials and textures. But not only the artificial light, it was the use of the natural light. So it was really celebrating the positioning and space planning for a daytime use. Mm-hmm. And then in the evening, it was doing something different. And that for me was like, wow, it's so obvious, but so many people don't think about it and don't know kind of where to start. And as a designer and a creative, the difficult thing is sometimes a client understanding how big that change can be and the value of it. So yes, it's been a big thing for me for many years.
Awesome. So before we maybe dive into your professional life, like every hero's journey, I would like to start at the beginning. Do you have, or do you remember the first time you became aware of light, or what's your first memory of a certain light or atmosphere?
You know, I kind of, my story really, because I grew up in Colchester, which is England's oldest recorded town. And I've kind of, wow. I've told this story a few times to clients and anyone that will listen, but I think it really paints a good picture of where I come from. And as England's oldest recorded town, we had this beautiful old castle where Queen Boadicea, you know, she stopped the Romans invading, and there's a lot of history. And history as a kid, you just don't quite appreciate. And, you know, I used to have a skateboard, and you've got cobbled streets, and you watch films on America of these beautiful skate spots, and you think, oh, well,
and relate,
nothing
yeah.
like that here. And I kind of, had a dislike for history and these old castles, but I knew that I had something, you know, I could see the value in the castle, but I also had this ambition that I want to create something myself. I was like, you know, there's the early James Bond films, the Star Wars films, and it was this futuristic outlook of the kind of not too distant future that seemed very believable and as far away from this old castle and cobble streets as possible. And I thought, I have a burning ambition to shape the future with my work, and didn't know quite what it was, but, you know, like with Star Wars, you've got these beautiful glossy floors and illuminated details, and the early James Bond films that were designed by Ken Adam, who designed the Goldfinger House, Dr. No, you know, these amazing buildings in the 70s that, you know, would still look futuristic today, this timeless design that used lighting and, you know, unusual modern materials, but as far away from these historic castles as possible, almost like a futuristic castle. You know, they're very statement, grand buildings. And I thought, well, you know, that's where I want to go with my work. I want to be one of the people shaping the future. And that was an early kind of memory that I can think back to quite clearly. You know, I must have been in my kind of coming up for 10 years old, thinking I'm going to make a mark on the world. My dad had an old American hot rod, and it was basically a 1955 Chevy Bel Air black. And, awesome. You know, in England, that was pretty rare. I mean, it wasn't, you know, financially, it wasn't a huge expense. It wasn't a terribly fancy thing. It was just an old car and it looked cool. But looking at some of the car shows we'd go to and seeing the engineering on some of these guys doing really cool custom cars, they basically blended the good bits from the historical side and added that modern twist to it. And that's kind of where I got a love for engineering, customization, and actually a respect for history and historical things. You know, people, these old castles, you know, now I look at them and think, wow, those guys invented sewers and, you know, protection and all this. And it's just, you know, it's amazing. But, you know, now I can put my creative design of understanding materials and manufacturing, and it's an exciting place to be. But so, yeah, from an early point of view, I knew I had a burning ambition to kind of shape the future.
Oh, wow. I love that. I love that story. Growing up in Colchester is how you pronounce it, Colchester. You know, because I can relate to that so much, because not only from my own experience, but also talking to other creators, sometimes if you grow up in a certain environment, you sometimes have to fight it off. You know, your punk rock phase, you have to be anti everything. So, and it sounds like it was similar to you. You had enough of cobblestone and an old medieval, beautiful maybe architecture, but you wanted Star Wars and shiny and glossy and American cars. And so, I mean, this is something you can work with, I think, the anticipation, being against and with something. And I really wonder if we dive into this a little bit more in maybe your earliest design works, and just to get a sense of this this transformation you did from, okay, I'm totally against this, I want Star Wars, I want absolute futuristic work, and now you can appreciate it. Is this something you had to integrate over time consciously, or did it just happen?
You know, I just being around the cars and seeing these James Bond buildings, I kind of knew it was something physical, as in, my mum was an artist and she had the grace and the delicacy. My dad was very practical, he could weld, he could do all sorts of things, and that for me was the physical, hands-on, the materials, and it was what I wanted to do, but I didn't know quite where it was going to go. And I actually signed up for an engineering course after school, and the engineering was microelectronics and bits of machining and stuff. And actually, they're things that I do nowadays and actually, really enjoy them. But it didn't have the expressive thing that I was looking for at that time. So I think I dropped out after the first few months, went and worked on a building site for a few months over the winter. Thought, oh my God, I don't want to be doing this for too long. And I'd signed up for an art course the following year, and the art course gave me the freedom to experiment with a load of different medium, graphic design, painting, various things. And I actually spent most of my time in the workshop, because I had always had ideas for things, but what always came to me was, hang on, I need to know how to make this, and I want to jump on the machine, and I want to learn how to grind this bit of metal. I want to see this surface, which is like a, it almost looks like a CD, and that you kind of get that from skimming the end of a piece of metal with a milling machine, and it creates this beautiful circular grain. And for me, it was these details that you like seeing pistons and engine parts and things that feel very kind of high tech, but there's a kind of beauty, a kind of minimal beauty to their look. And but there's something that's kind of honest about the engineering and the storytelling behind these parts. And I just kind of loved the narrative in all of these bits and pieces. And actually, once I'd kind of got through the experimentation, thinking, hey, I love making, I'm in this is great fun. It was apparent my teachers were encouraging me to get into the model making and kind of film special effects direction. And I thought, you know what, this is absolutely perfect, because I can jump into this kind of imaginary world where, I loved Blade Runner. I loved this sci-fi feel of a world which just wasn't too far away, And you thought, okay, designing vehicles or buildings or, even the signage and all the things in these sci-fi films that I loved was all, it was lighting, and it was these kind of the way the material worked with lighting. And that was definitely a, I was kind of turned on by it. It was like, it was exciting. And when I went on to university, I was doing a model making course. But actually, as soon as we joined, a lot of it was all going into computer graphics. And I realized the industry was turning into basically a computer design course. And there was a, I mean, there was still hands-on model making, but I just wanted to be feeling materials and, smelling things, touching it, tactile, breaking it, just seeing what I could do with it, testing limitations. And I kind of thought, oh, you know what, that's it. Really, I was disappointed that suddenly I found the thing that I was so excited to be in, and now it was actually being taken out from under my feet. And I think, you know what, I don't want to just sit on a computer for years. And I love that. You can produce some beautiful renderings, and the world of computer design is absolutely incredible, and I wish I had more patience for doing more of it. But I love materials. I love to get hands-on. I love to touch it. I love, to feel the breaking point, the limitations. I feel that from I've always had a good understanding of materials and that they're what they're capable of and how they work with light. And where the lighting relationship came into it is we would create little gigs at university, made a little DJ booth and some lights and various things. And we're playing in these old crummy nightclubs, and what you realize in a crummy nightclub is that some fairly cheap and interesting lighting completely changes a space. And it was there that I thought, well, wow, this is so transformative, because we'd go there the next day and take all our kit out, and you see what a hellhole these buildings were, and it'd be like, oh God, what a, this didn't look like this 12 hours ago. And I've taken that kind of energy and, impact into, my work today. And where it led from the model making is I kind of moved into product and industrial design, and my end of year show was designing these beautiful tables with lighting in. So I had these lovely American walnut surfaces, beautifully engineered legs, but with a layer of light underneath. And lighting came from individual pieces to then details in rooms. And it was like, okay, here I am building my kind of Tron environments, not just to be, I suppose to begin with, it was more about the exciting space. I wanted to make things exciting. And the thing with lighting for me, it was lighting up people's, it gives energy. If it's in a nightclub, the lighting helps with the music and there's an energy and there's a connection with people. And that relates to my work, my interiors. It's this energy and connection with people. And sometimes it's more obvious than others, but it's super important part, and it's so effective. It took a while to build, but I kind of always knew it was there. It just, it took me a little while to harness how I was going to do something with it.
Yeah, this is amazing. So that's the right, I think we're on the right track. So we come from a world of cobblestone and sci-fi fantasies of music and lighting, engineering, special effects. So maybe you can take us a little bit on your journey where all of this came together, maybe where you had struggles with it. I mean, you talked about before we started recording that you made music, you're still DJing from time to time. So I think there is such a strong connection to, I mean, lighting is a lot about atmosphere and emotion, as you just said, and so is music. I think light is decorating the ambience of a room, and music is decorating a piece of time, but it's still very much connected, if you know what I mean. So did you ever, do you still incorporate this today? Maybe before we go into your journey, from back then to until today?
I'm gonna put it down to there's this kind of stimulation of senses. So I talked about I had a need to get hands-on with my materials and feel the physical material. The lighting was then another, it was the visual thing that was so powerful that it really changed the space. With the lights off or the lights on, that's a huge obvious difference. But music, that's the sound sense. So you've got the touch, you've got the sight, you've got the sound. I would even throw in, I would even start putting, perfumes and stuff as triggers in my artwork and stuff, just because they're sensory triggers of either a memory or something interesting, or but usually, it's an instantaneous gratification of,
10%.
oh, I love that tune. Wow, yeah, I'm going to dance, or wow, you changed the lights, and oh, now I'm in relaxing mode, and there's an ability to do that with lighting and sound, and it's powerful. And sorry, I think I'm not sure I was answering the right question there, but the senses for me were, these things combine and they're all important, and but they also complement each other very well. And from loving music and loving how to entertain people. You could do that in a garage. You could have a good time listening to some great music with your friends. You can put a few more lights in and it becomes a bit cooler. And then people are like, oh, hang on, you've got a cool party pad, and it's just, upping the level of
100%.
entertainment and creativity. And it's pretty easy once you start tinkering with that. And I suppose that's where the next stage of my story comes into play, is that when I left university, I was working for a PR and events agency. And we were doing events for like Radio One and a lot of music events. So we had DJs and we'd go off on tour and you'd do stuff in nightclubs and stuff. So again, that was me being able to design things for a brand that related to the brand, so I could see how I could make a revenue stream out of my creative work with lighting and entertainment in a venue. And it all just worked together really beautifully. So that was the stepping stone of actually now I can see I can make some money out of it. And it wasn't, and I'm gonna be honest, I've not been driven, never been driven by, oh, I want to have loads of money when I'm older. It's like I love the creative aspect of things. Sometimes things are far more expensive to make than others because, I love the fancy machined parts and that material is expensive. And inevitably, it's going to look better in a fancy house that looks like a James Bond villain's house than it does looking in a, something that's a bit more mundane. So, It's always the ambition and the idea and the imagination is always probably a bit above my station. But there's always I've always got somewhere I want to go or take people, So whether it's a musical journey, if I was DJing, you're taking them on a little journey. The same if I was doing a gig, I've got a few lights and I make the journey build up and it becomes bigger. And then by the end, it's just euphoria. And it's the same if I'm designing an interior for someone. I want them to go on a journey. And I often say, right, imagine what happens if we go through the front door of your new house. What's the first thing you see? Do we walk in, see a beautiful chandelier above your head? Do we see, some artwork on the wall? There's a bit of a, you want them to imagine, right, we're showing off to your new friends or your best mates coming in. It's like, hey, look at my house. And you take them on this journey. And it's about sharing something. It's about connecting with someone, but it's being proud of something you've worked for. And, if I'm creating that, I'm helping them tell their story and doing it in a way that's personal to them. I put my imagination on it, but it's basically the stuff they like because most people will say, I like this, but I don't like that. And it's like, okay,
Yeah,
great,
100%.
use that. And so, my creative work stems around things for a personal journey for certain people. Unless I can, have free rein and I can, I'm doing a party, then I can say, right, this is what it's going to look like. Everyone has a good time. If you're designing it in someone's house, they've got a criteria of, well, I want it to do this, and I've got three kids, and I've got two dogs, and I want to play football all day, or you know what I mean? There's some bits you have to work with. If you're doing it for a brand, then you've got to listen to what the brand wants to do, what they're trying to do with their target audience, and that kind of drives a different solution. So, creativity is fun in that realm that, you can be advised. So I just kind of put my magic ingredients. Well, they're not even magic ingredients. So just, put my few little thought chains, and then the creative ideas, kind of happen as find a solution for what you're trying to do.
Awesome. I want to circle back to the more general idea of creativity and emotional impact later, but let's go back to you went after engineering school, you were working for a PR company, right? You did it for other people, for other brands. So how did you Yeah, career-wise, I mean, you founded your first design company in 2001, right? 100%. So what happened between that to say, okay, I work for brands, I do my own free projects. So when did you found the entrepreneurial spirit, the founder spirit in you?
So I basically, when we finished the show, I went to Middlesex University in North London, and so I had this beautiful table I'd made, and I was invited to be part of the new designers show, which so we, I suppose the standout pieces, the university had their spot at the show, and I was invited to be part of it, and I got some good attention from some design journalists. One guy invited me to a show in London and then another show in Milan. So as I'd got this job pretty much the second I'd left university, I knew I had something to something secure and exciting, but also my design thing is like, okay, well, I've still got an in the design world now, and I've been invited to a show in London and one in Milan, and that we toured, we went to these two beautiful shows, and I met clients who were like, wow, this is we love your work. And someone asked me to build a bar in their living room. And that, I was 22 at the time. And,
Wow, nice.
that's pretty young to be thinking, great, I'm building a bar in someone. Yeah, it was a first job. It wasn't, so build a bar in someone's house, I thought it was pretty cool. And I did that in my spare time. So, I'd plan events all week, then I'd work the events at the weekend. So, I had no time to do my own stuff. So I'm not even sure how I managed to do a couple of these projects, but I did a few personal projects as well, and started building a few things and thinking, you know what, I can still serve the company I'm working for, as in I can still actually do some of the design work and actually have a little studio building some of the exhibition stands and building some of the artworks that I was doing for some of these brands. And it got to the point where I have to leave because I've got a job that's going to take up too much time and I now can't commit to an event. And but I did keep some of those clients, and they're still very good friends of mine that even owned that agency at the time. And they do some cool events. And it's that experience and it's that kind of drama and theatre and storytelling that really played a big part of my let's say creative world of how to kind of communicate a story. The business side is it got to the point where I had opportunities and I was in a world where there were, it was exciting. There's lots of stuff going on and people had cool projects. And it was like, well, even without a big business plan and a really, let's say, a firm idea of where I was going, I dived into it, a bit gung ho, if you like. And so that was, yeah, got to the point, I think I was 24 that I had to leave the PR company. And it was like, right, I'm going on my own and I just can't do both. And, I can still do serve the same relationships and businesses. But so I had part of the events industry and commercial kind of projects. And then half of it was going into kind of domestic interiors where the people who owned the nightclubs we were working in wanted some work for their house or, some furniture for their garden or whatever. And it kind of started with that. I had a workshop creating my own pieces and it kind of it grew into more of an artistic sense because these pieces, had a very much an artistic element to them. It's not just a piece of furniture or a piece of shelving. It was something that did more than that. And, the lighting was always apparent all the way through my work, whether it's building a desk for someone in their office, it would have a lighting detail in just so that it felt that bit cooler than a normal desk you could buy off the shelf. Because, otherwise, why ask me to do it?
100%, yeah.
And then I've moved through products and artworks, and the timepiece you see behind me is actually a spin-off of static artwork. So I was creating these illuminated wall hung pieces of let's call them a static artwork that they don't do anything, but they illuminate and just look beautiful. And my imagination was thinking, okay, well, I'm designing art for these new hotels, and that the hotel of the future are these, commercial spaces that people haven't even imagined yet. And because I kept engraving 60 pieces of material out of a sheet or a face, it just made sense to animate these 60 pieces. And it was the perfect relationship between engraved material and the remaining material that left on show. So the timepiece behind me is actually a mirrored, sorry, a marbled glass. So you can see the texture of the marble, but actually the hero of it is the lighting. So, there is a, it's like, I work with light and shadow. The shadow is just as important as the light because the lighting bits elevate the project, and sometimes you need the darkness to set off the lighting. So there is, yin and yang, light and dark, they both have to play together, and that's a clever relationship that you kind of work with. But after I made this first animation of the timepiece, then I was like, wow, it's just something even stronger than just an animated artwork. I've always had a passion for watches and mechanical details, even cars, the machinery, the way things work. A watch is just, it's on another level because it's so small and it's so intricate. And I'm 6'5", so I've got big hands, and I tend to make things on a fairly big scale. And so working on a little watch is probably always something I dreamed of, but actually, it's not my playing field. The bigger space is more my arena. And so for 7, 8 years, I've been working on these timepieces where the more I work with time and the busier and crazier our lives get, and the more, the social media, just the more intense things are, and the less you can actually communicate with people because you've got Facebook and WhatsApp and this and that and that, and you're just suddenly, oh yeah, I emailed you, I saw it was on, and it's like, my, it's enough to make your brain burst when you've got businesses, families, schools to check. You know, it's just it's a lot. And the clocks for me suddenly became a beacon of making people have time to themselves. You know, it's like if I go to a trade show, I would encourage people to, you know, just stop and stand and stare and just watch the seconds pass for a few minutes. And yeah, I could leave them then for a couple of minutes, go and talk to someone else, and then, you know, they'd be like, oh, I've been stood here for 20 minutes just watching the time go past, having this lovely connection. And you know, it is an emotional connection, where it's almost like a therapeutic pattern where the light is calmly, you know, as I say, massaging your soul a little bit. It's just nice to have some seconds of, I'm here in the presence. I'm grateful to have my health. I'm grateful to be stood here. And that meaning of wanting people to appreciate their own space, you know, have a moment for yourself, you know, do that, please. You know, it's absolutely super important. You know, we're all, as I said, crazy busy. It's busier than ever. But actually, is that time more valuable, or is it more, you know, do you feel more rewarded from some of these things you're doing? And I question that. And in fact, I know it's not the case, you know, and I have to really remind myself, you know what, actually, I need to go and make half an hour to go and build some Lego with my son because he's growing up too quick. And I could, you know, I've got so much work to do and I've got to communicate now in different time zones. And it's like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, children have grown up and it's like, oh, hang on a minute, that went too quickly. Yeah. And yeah, I'm not trying to preach about age old scenarios, but
no, that's important. Yeah.
The time piece, I really feel, is an important thing and a really important body of work where I want people to have this connection and, you know, have these moments to themselves. And, you know, okay, it's sometimes at night, it's 11 o'clock, I'm going to bed, and I can just still sit on the sofa and just have 2 or 3 minutes watching the seconds go. It just brings my, just calms me down a little bit. And what's been exciting is it then moves into the world of mental wellness and yoga practices and other things where actually time-driven exercises or breathing practices work really beautifully against a lovely timepiece using patterns of light in these beautiful surroundings. So I've started creating these, you know, perfect wellness spaces where they're really beautiful, you know, lovely materials, and it's an experience. And it's, you know, it is a, I'd say, you know, it's an important experience. And I've lost my train of thought there a little bit.
No, but that's fine.
The importance of these experiences are, you know, are there for the soul and for your human to repair, but they're also, you know, a very enjoyable experience if you can only do once every 6 months. And you know, okay, let's be honest, most people can't have a yoga studio in their home with lovely lighting and all these bits and pieces, but in a hotel, you know, maybe you go and pay for that experience once a year or as a treat or, you know, whatever it might be. And it's kind of those experiences that I'm trying to design some new pieces for that fit those really beautiful memorable experiences. You know, I want people to, I love to light up people's work. I love to see their eyes light up when they're connecting and engaging with my work. And, you know, that's what I want. I want people to have a good memory. I want people to think, wow, that was just, it was such a nice experience to be in that space, just to, you know, experience the setup that these guys put on. And that for me is, you know, is what I want to stand for with my work. I want people to enjoy it and be happy. And if people aren't excited and happy, then there's, yeah, the world's too stressful in itself. So, you know, I don't want to be doing anything that goes down that road. So.
Oh, that's beautiful. Okay. I have a lot. I took a lot of notes from what you just said. And let's see. I think we talked a lot about intention already with what you said about there are philosophical aspects of light and shadows and of time and mindfulness practice. And I want to cover all of this, but going back one step towards, because you just moved past something that really made me think about your decisions real quick, because at the beginning of our conversation, you talked about your mom and dad, with her being an artist, like fine arts and paintings, and your dad being an engineer. So you have both of these sides. And I really wondered how they came into play when you said, okay, you came right out of college, of education, you were working full time, you were doing businesses on the side, projects on the side, and then you said, okay, I'm going to fly solo. I'm going to go all in, found my own company, which is kind of a, I mean, especially if you're in the creative field, this is always a, as you said, it's a risky business, because we're not, most of us don't have the economics background, or even rely more on a gut feeling, on their talent, on their craft, on whatever, which is perfectly fine. But it's not like you have the perfect business plan ahead. You have the banking background. You have everything in sheets and ready to go. So I really wondered what your, if you want to go into this, what your interior internal process was, talking in the voice of your mom and dad, maybe like these two halves. I feel like you really were able to put these two halves together and saying, okay, I'm gonna found something, and it's gonna be very creative. As you said, you have aspects of artistic work in it, because you have a lot of intention, a lot of thought you put in, and at the same time, it has to work and be a business.
For sure. Well, I'm gonna give you the honest answer, and that was, you know, anybody could have told me anything, Ben, that's not going to work, or this, and I would have been, you know, I'm too bullish to the creative desire was
awesome.
Nobody was going to tell me otherwise, you know.
Fantastic, and yeah.
I have learned the hard way that, you know, sometimes, you know, you can get things wrong, pricing projects, you know, I get excited, you know, let's talk about, there's a romance with certain projects come along, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing, and you can then drop your guard a little bit, as because you want it to happen so much that you kind of get a little tripped up on that. Well, hang on a minute. This is probably, you know, this is where I can do this for that budget. And then you think, well, actually, hang on, that's actually really difficult. And then you start, you know, over thinking the design, and you get too excited, and it's like, yeah, you have to bring it back down again to make some money, because sometimes, you know, I've done a project and then think, hang on a minute, actually, I've paid everyone else. There's kind of nothing quite left for me, because, you know, I've done projects where they come in very, you know, last minute. You've got an agency. It's like, we've got 2 weeks to turn this something around. Can you come up with something? And it's like, and I've done that on numerous occasions. And sometimes you do better than others. But, you know, as a business, that is a stressful thing to do on a regular basis. And I remember my dad, you know, having a conversation. We used to go to the drag racing, and, you know, we'd watched some the dragsters up and down in England go up the quarter mile, and some of the motorbikes. That was a good time to get together. And he used to say, Ben, very proud of your determination and stuff, but I just don't get the commitment and the desire to go, you know, so all in, to the point where it's almost detrimental to your, you know, a bit to your sanity, a bit to you, because, you know, it takes up so much stress and time and energy. And he said, you know, he used to say to me, you know, if you've got, you know, enough money to, you know, buy your friends a beer, take your, you know, your wife out for dinner, you've got a roof over your head, you don't need all the fancy bells and whistles. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, money is not a thing that is a driver for having a business. It's the creative ambition. And I suppose what grew was the scale and the things that you could do, and the new machinery and the new materials, and the, wow, this is going to be even bigger and more interesting and exciting. And, you know, I still haven't got the Bond film. You know, I still want to put one of my timepieces in a Bond film, and, you know, I'm still working on those kind of relationships. But the dream is still there. It's just, you know, you have to be real. I think my mum, she was also probably a little, okay, well, Ben, you seem to be confident and know what you want to do. But I think worried that, you know, it's a pretty dog eat dog world out there. And, you know, it's easy to get things wrong. And, I'm lucky that I've had a supportive family, and things sometimes do better than others, and you have ups and downs. But I think, you do things from a with a good intention and for with good people, and you just learn to be a bit more sensible and wise as to what things to turn down. And if you don't learn as you're going, then I suppose then you are the fool and probably deserve to be burnt. Well, not that I want anyone to be burnt, but if you
I
keep
know.
making the same mistakes, then you've that's there's only so much you can do. But so I think they appreciated I had this ambition, but didn't quite understand the need for it to go quite so far. My dad, he had an adventuristic streak. Him and my mum went around the world on a motorbike, a Norton Commando,
Wow, nice.
in 1975. They went from Colchester to Sydney, Australia, which is 17,500 miles. And you couldn't Google what was going on there. And they rode through Iraq, and kids throwing stones at them in the streets. My mum's blonde hair flowing out, and it's crazy to think they would do something like that. And but it's that's the thing of being alive, having a great adventure, work hard enough to enjoy experiences. And yes, you get to a, I got to a point, we had 5 lovely years in California, and before we left, I had a workshop and I'd taken on too much work. I had art collections and we're doing exhibition stands and interiors, and I was even trying to do my own house. And it got to the point, it was just too much. And you, I suppose, excitement and I my personal thing probably thought I was indestructible, and I could I could just I hadn't found the right balance. It got to the point where I could keep going, and thought, and it got to the point, this is too much. Now I've found the limit, and not until you get to that point do you realize actually this is a bit dangerous, or it's out of my comfort zone, and I had to kind of calm it down. And so that's I think that's the point. I'm 46 years old now, so I'm a bit wiser and want to have time with my kids and good memories and experiences. And funny, talking about motorbike adventure, I just went on a trip last week across the Alps with a bunch of motorbike guys on the Mallee Rally, which was a kind of adventure I felt I owed my family, my dad and stuff, for many years,
Awesome.
because I just haven't had the time to do some of these things. So very lucky my wife kind of agreed to let me go on this adventure. And it lets you do some good thinking and think what the priorities are in life. And I still want to create connections with my work. I still want to make people happy. I still want them to be excited. There's just a level, it just doesn't need to take up every minute of my life. And I can have some time for other people and the people close around me. So
That's a very good description of the of a lot of I think a lot of entrepreneurs can relate to this, because you have the ups and downs, the scale of everything, finding the outside form of it maybe, or even the inside form emotionally. And also what was always struck me, because you just mentioned this, you work in so many different fields, so effortlessly it seems. Did you ever, or what was the process, your internal process, and when do you define a piece you make? When is it art? When is it a commercial project? When is it just for a client? When is your heart in it? I mean, your heart is probably all the time in it, but you know what I mean? It's like, I
for
know a lot
sure.
of creative, especially creative entrepreneurs, that kind of need to balance this out or find the boundaries. And for you, it seems to be very clear, or even without any boundaries, when something drifts towards art and commercial projects.
Yeah, well, something like the timepiece, it was never calculated research that I thought, there's a missing gap in the market for an illuminated kinetic art clock. It was an escalation of, let's say, personal projects that I'm creating. That, when I'm doing interiors and stuff, I can make a few pieces along the side, which I think, you know what, that will go for this house perfectly, or this would work perfectly in that bar. And sometimes I can get them into those projects. Sometimes it's like the customer's like, you know what, that's not what I want. And I'm like, yeah, okay, you know what? Actually, this is the thing I want in my house, you know. And there's a sometimes being creative, you've just got to let it flow as to what you want to do. And sometimes I do that, and it's a lot of fun. Most of the time, though, it's something is designed for a purpose, or was designed for a brand or a project, and then I maybe have taken elements and said, you know what, I could make a great artwork out of that sculpture, or a something else. So it's usually pretty organic. There's not a lot of I'm gonna be honest, sat down, calculated, or you know what, there is a real need for an illuminated chess set in the market. That's I would love to say I'm clever, the clever businessman to say that. It's really driven by creative passion that I kind of it's a thirst almost, and I have to
As
quench
great
the
things are.
thirst. And I think that's just because I'm more creative, let's say, than I am a serious business person. I have to run a business, but business is a byproduct of the stuff that I create. And I feel very privileged to be in the industry that I'm in, be very privileged to some of the clients that have invested in my ambition or my ideas and my imagination, and very grateful to them. They know that I've gone above and beyond and put my absolute heart and soul into it. There's a I was asked in when we were in the States by a customer I did a house for about 10 years ago, if I would do one while I was in America. And I said, well, I'm actually moving back to the UK in a couple of months, so I'd be able to come and have a look. And they were so grateful that I could come and manage their project for them again. And they were a pleasure to work with. They buy into ideas. They have a certain taste which works well for my kind of creative imagination. And sometimes it's just, there's good partnerships. Occasionally someone comes to me and says, I love what you do, but I want to do this, this, and this with it. And it's like, well, that's then not my input. You might as well go and do what you want to do with that, that, and that. And I like to have the right balance of, being able to put my thing and add my value to something that they get a benefit from. So yeah, it's not a case of I would just work with anyone or do kind of anything. I do feel the business has almost led me to a degree where opportunities have arisen, or brands have come to me, or I've been at times when I've needed the business because it's suddenly I've done a big project and suddenly things calm down and it's like, well, I need to now go out and put my marketing hat on and get myself out there. And in this day and age, that's it's kind of a complicated thing because there's so much content, so much stuff going out. And I say complicated for me because I have a lot of strings to my bow. I have artworks, I have furniture, I do interiors. And there is a danger of being a jack of all trades, master of none. And I would I'm very proud of the diversity of my work. I've created projects at the Ice Hotel in Sweden. I've created projects in the desert at Burning Man in Nevada. And, I've created interiors and all sorts of weird and wonderful things, but they kind of, and if I'm talking to someone without them having looked at my work, that's kind of a huge diverse thing. And they've said, well, how does it all look together? Is it all completely different? Well, I think there's elements that you would understand that, can come from the same designer because of the design language or certain effects or material combinations. So, when I'm marketing myself, it's a difficult thing to an extent because, am I going for the domestic interior? Well, most of my domestic interiors come from recommendations because someone has seen a house I did for someone and said, wow, you've got to see this guy because he's the guy that does it. And it's, my use of lighting. And so if it's the commercial projects, it's kind of, maybe an agency or a brand has a need for some unusual solution, and certain people know they could come to me and I would give them an unusual or the solution to that, and I can either turn it around quickly, or you know, I have a small operation, and I can, you know, I feel blessed of the connections I have with my manufacturers, that over 20 years I've built this huge network of prop makers, car customizers, people in the industries that I kind of love and I'm interested in, but I take them out of their normal world of car manufacturing or whatever they're doing and bring them into the interior world or the furniture world. And that's something I think that's really quite nice. And there's a lovely story behind it. And certainly it's very important to certain customers of mine. But, you know, I like there to be an honesty about how things are made, and even a witness of how you see the details. And, you know, and that's probably very different to some people's stories. You know, some people are very happy. I want to be the best interior designer making lovely little frilly cottages and stuff. And that's the world I love. And, you know, I have quite a diverse range of things. And, you know, I love to bring in elements of sci-fi and vehicles and engineering and lighting and detail. And it's not going to be for everybody, you know, and I think, and it never tries to be, but the few people, especially the people it's for, I want to, you know, blow their minds on how brilliant this thing becomes. And if it's their home or it's their car or it's their event or it's their pub or whatever it is, they know I'm going all out to, one, push my imagination, but two, give them the best value, because I want them to go, Ben, it was fun working with you. You know, I want them to just, every time they look in their space, go, wow, that was just, you know, the results speak for themselves. And, you know, that for me is hugely important. I'd love to say it was more calculated, but it's about doing it my way. And that way has kind of evolved. And, you know, I'm very grateful to everyone that's been part of that journey, helping me create it, from the clients to kind of say yes to these ideas. And it's nice to tell a story, you know, it's actually nice sometimes to just share how these projects were made. I feel very lucky. So Mark, one thing that I thought would be quite nice to show you is that on the passing of the hour, this timepiece has a nice little program detail. Something very small, but it's a nice little effect. And it's one of those things that I like to build into my work as these little surprise experiences that just elevate the kind of level of my work. And I hope it's a nice little representation of the sort of things that I do. So anyone watching the podcast, fantastic, please just watch what's about to happen.
Oh, fantastic. It's like a little countdown moment. I love it. Nice. I love it. Yeah, again, it's a testament to your love for detail and the appreciation of time and passing, and I think the whole intention you put into a timepiece, as you call it. Well, as the sweet people just saw, we had a little editing. That was due to me, but this gave us the opportunity to witness the lovely hour change in animation. So coming back to what you just said, with the one quote you said I really loved, is that business is a byproduct of the things that you create, which resonates so deeply, I think, not only with me but with a lot of creatives out there. And that's a very good way to put it, and a good attitude. But now that we heard everything you've done in the past, today you run Ben Rousseau Design. You work with architects, developers, brand marketing agencies, a lot of different clientele, and also high-end residential clients. And you create a project, and you manage projects. And it comes down, you have this line where you say special and unique installations. So maybe you can give us a little pitch on what the Ben Rousseau Design Studio stands for, and how people can actually work with you, and how does that look?
Yeah. So I'll use an example of a project we did very recently. A commercial developer, they're based up in Manchester, got in touch with a kind of art agent that I have that looks out for very, unique projects in modern buildings. And they basically had a five-story atrium, which they wanted to create some sort of lighting effect. It was viewable from the street, so there's big windows that people can see in. The building has a big spiral staircase that leads into it, and there's lots of very cool media businesses and stuff there. And so, they had a budget in mind, and I had to think of how can I create something with the volume to fill this space, something that would be simple to build in a five, not only is, coming up with an idea, you've got to get it in there. And, sometimes a five-story atrium means building a scaffolding in a, an unusual scenario, and the cost of that scaffolding can be, considerable amount of money. So that comes off your, effectively your build budget or whatever. Now, this project, it was basically the building had this old, I designed a concept, and they'd kind of agreed to the concept. It was like this giant twisting formation of strips of light. And it wasn't until we were on site doing a site visit that I was talking with the architect, and he said, well, could we get a bit more movement and energy in the piece? And when we went upstairs, they had this giant spiral staircase that worked up through an old chimney stack, and because it was an old industrial building. And that was the perfect, relationship between actually taking the architecture of the building and actually turning it into this focal point and heartbeat of this light sculpture. So it basically follows the same rhythm and pattern of the energy of people walking up and down the staircase as in the sculpture, which hangs in this big atrium. So we programmed some very simple twisting light patterns that just follow this gentle movement that celebrates calm energy and beauty. And it is something that looks quite visual and graphic. And it looks great. I mean, it's a perfect example of a client has a space, doesn't really know what to put into that space. And I, really have to understand what someone's trying to do. It's like, it doesn't want to be a, it's not a nightclub, although the building used to be a nightclub. If anyone in England knows, it used to be Sankey Soaps, which is a very famous old, rave nightclub in Manchester. And they regenerated this whole area, and it's a lovely place now. It was a bit run down many years ago, but and the guys that run the whole premises have done a great job. It has to deliver on a number of things. It has to be creative and interesting without overtaking a space and being too dominant. And also, I need to make some money from it, and I need to give them value. So, there's a bunch of ingredients that I think we got, spot on there. And it's that's a challenge of creating a solution for a space. And very often they're site-specific works that I create. Sometimes not a tall, skinny atrium. Sometimes it's a big, flat, open courtyard, or it's a bar with lots of kind of pockets and detail. There's a physical limitation, and I have to assess what we can do, how people are going to walk through it, how they're going to navigate, what the client wants to happen, what they want to experience. And then once I've taken down that information and those details, I kind of work out where I can be creative, where I can make something, dramatic. I don't want it to be dramatic, like, oh wow, it's this kind of, it's like a thunderstorm. It's more like a bit of a poetic dance. It's something that's graceful and interesting, and unless someone really wants, right, we want the crash bang wallop, then that's obviously part of the brief. But this work has to deliver to their needs, because I'm always designing something for them, not for me.
So that's a fantastic example of your work. I really wonder if you begin the conversation, let's say with this building or any other of your projects, where does the conversation begin? Do you begin talk about the emotion, or when do you reach that point? Because a lot of what you say revolves around emotion and the feel of a room and intention. So when does that come into play?
You know, the emotional part comes for the is the bit where I am, let's, you know, selling the idea is the wrong bit, but there is an element where I put together an idea which I think gives them a solution. When I'm presenting the idea, sometimes I'm not. Sometimes someone else is actually, you know, putting my ideas forward, because, you know, that's just the way it works. And but I think it's always better when I can kind of explain, well, the reason my idea is a good solution is because if you are Mr. I'm the businessman and I'm on the fifth floor, I get to move in and I see this beautiful positive energy, and, you know, I pay my top bucks to be in the you know, the top floor. Mm-hmm. And actually I feel that I'm getting that extra level of commitment from my landlord, because they care about me and they've invested in this beautiful place. And I'm proud to say, hey, look at my the amazing building I'm working in. And for me, these things are, that's the bit why my idea and working with me is a good solution. I mean, an idea can be a matter of taste. You know, someone can say, well, here's my idea, and I can have my idea, and, you know, not one is better than the other. It's just, it just comes down to taste, really. I mean, let's say some of the time, you know, I think mine, there's a reason I designed something, and most of the time that's, I can't think of a better way why it would be, it'd be better. But, you know, someone, it's the storytelling and the narrative that is after you've done the creation that justifies where their money is going to be well spent. And it means that they're happy to, yeah, to pay, to, you know, to spend their money on it. They're getting the return. They're getting the things that are going to make people happy, because it's not just, okay, we've got money to spend in our fancy bank or whatever it is. And it's, you know, we have to, if we don't spend it, it gets used up somewhere else. You know, it's, you know, we genuinely, I would want the staff going into that building to every day feel it's a pleasure to come to work, you know, and if that's not happening for the people going into the building, I'm not really doing my job properly. And I, you know, I could take the money and run and say, thank you very much. But that, you know, that's just not, it doesn't give me any kind of gratification. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather people think, oh, it still looks cool, but I'm proud to come into this work, and I enjoy sharing my space as I pass through this atrium with it. And, you know, even when you're in the lift shaft, so in this building in Manchester, there's a lift shaft, so you can actually go up it, and the light pattern kind of twists as you go up the light in the lift shaft. And that, you know, I stand awesome. There with my phone and film it as I go up the lift. Yeah. And that is just cool. And, 100%. You know, anyone that goes in that building has got to think, yeah, that's a pretty nice little detail.
Yes. So and this is where we come to the impact of your work, of your projects, because it has a personal emotional impact, but it also has a business impact, so to speak. Maybe we can go into detail, because I think in your line of work and in what you design is the same with, if I do graphic design or even with some form of artworks or commercial works, whenever there's creativity involved, you have different layers of impact you have, and especially in your line of work. Maybe let's start with the I don't want to say boring side, because it's not the boring side, but with the impact for commercial spaces, for businesses. I mean, just what you said there is word of mouth. People share the location for what you did there, right? That's a huge impact. They talk about, hey, I've been to this place and look how amazing it is. I mean, that's probably not, you probably didn't even pin a value to this, but that's huge, right?
For sure. And, you know, I think in this day and age, there's so much stuff on social media and all, you know, and it's like, I like to think of my stuff that, first of all, it's delivering for those local people. It has to do that, because then if it does do that, then, you know, those people are going to say, hey, you know what, look, we have got this lovely space, because mm-hmm. most people have a phone in their hand 99% of their time, and it's an easy thing for people to do, and they become your fans, and that's great. I'm not, I'm doing a service first of all, but then the work, actually the connection and the emotion and the relationship grows. And then, after a few weeks, maybe someone's like, oh God, I've been seeing this thing for 4 weeks and I've never seen the blue pattern come on. And it's like, wow, I love that pattern. And I think that that is fantastic. Like with my clock, for instance, and I actually said the word clock, and I do not say the word clock. It's a timepiece.
Timepiece.
For me, it's an artwork and a piece of decoration first that I want people to interact with, and it's a thing of beauty, but it does happen to function as a real-time clock. Now, it doesn't have hands and numbers as a normal clock, and if someone was in a waiting room in a hotel or something, I want them to discover it. And so if they're sat there for a few minutes and, and they think, oh, hang on, is that seconds? Oh yeah, hang on, there's seconds. And then the next second, because it's a
It's
building
numbers.
pattern of light. So when the next minute appears, then, they go, wow, actually that's a clock. And then they're like, hey, Fred, look, have you seen this clock? And then suddenly, because they've discovered it, then the connection is much more powerful. And they're like, oh my God, actually, I love this clock. And they're like, I've found this amazing clock, which, and I think there's something important about that, because there's so much advertising and stuff rammed down your face, rammed down your throat. AI technology with things, doing your marketing for you, and everyone's trying to speed up and get more and more and more. But I feel the connection then becomes so much less authentic. And it's like, because you can read, oh, that bit of text sounds quite fancy, but it's written by someone that doesn't understand the emotion between a human and another human in that space or scenario. And at that point, you can say that is written by AI because it has no understanding of that emotion. And that for me is like, now it's worse than ever, because you've got to get through all of this nonsense, and people don't know what's right and wrong or real anymore. Renderings are so good, visuals as robots, even with your face talking to you, can look so good. It's terrifying. But I think that real connection is then so much more valuable and important, and which is why, for me, being able to come on and talk and tell my story and, really, really show you, hey, you know what? The man behind the work, it's meaningful for me as a purpose. I create this stuff because I'm passionate. I create it because it's what I was here to do. I feel, if I had all the money on the world, which I certainly don't, I would be creating beautiful things, for people. And it's just kind of what I naturally have to do. And I suppose, sorry, I got carried away with the, because
That's
it's
good.
just what I do, and I don't know if there's anything else I could add to that. So it's, but the AI thing, I do find, it muddies the water of the world of, it's very clever stuff, but being authentic to people when, you don't want stuff to be rammed down your throat. And I'm sorry, the story, the purpose of that story was advertising, and the clock, when you discover it for yourself, and if you discover my artwork or that connection, that's then a pure connection. You haven't been told to have that connection. Does that make sense? It's a
Oh, 100%.
naturally kind of occurring relationship, and that's what I want. And some people might not, they might not even notice or even care, but there's a few people that will go, I love that thing. And
And that's the people you're gonna have a real connection with, right? And I mean, what you were describing is I think of age old storytelling rule that you can just apply to design, right? If you want to tell a joke and you make them come up with the punchline, or why do jokes work? Because it's something that surprises you, or you have to get it, or if you have a thriller or other storylines where you have to think ahead and maybe come to a conclusion or whatever. And it's the same process, it's the same technique, so to speak, adapted to design. And I really like that. And yeah, you actually kind of answered both the commercial and the personal impact your work have on on people, I think. Yeah, that's
you know, the thing for me is that it's, you know, we are humans, and whether we're working, you want to be, if you're working, you want to feel looked after. You want to feel that the people you're working for are care about you, and you want to do a good job for that person. You know, if people are working with me, I want them to feel invested in my projects, my vision, you know, my the way we're trying to deliver something special and unique. And, you know, I am absolutely eternally grateful for some of the people that allow me to make these things happen, that are involved with their expertise. You know, it's all good having an imagination and an idea, but sometimes there's a, well, how am I going to make this thing happen? Or, you know, how do I get this guy to make this special thing? Because he's over there doing this and that's not his world. And how do I convince him? And, you know, it's, but I'll use an example with the clocks recently. I was making some mini films about how I was invited to the Alliance of British Clock and Watchmakers show, which is predominantly a kind of watch. It's a watch and a clock organization, but it was the first show where all these British, amazing British watch designers were got together. And this is at the beginning of the year. And when I got in contact with them, they were like, wow, you're doing something really interesting, really unique. And I wasn't sure how people were going to kind of take my work, because it's kind of so futuristic and high tech. But I was, you know, very, very much, very well received. And it was a pleasure to kind of do something that fitted into a new world in a slightly different way. And it was the meaning for me when we were making these films. We went to the factory that makes the spinnings, which is I'm very conscious of recycled materials and using things locally. So everything is made within 100-mile radius of my workshop down in South Coast. And we went to the spinning factory who make my aluminium spinnings. And that's a giant big metal tool on a frame. And they kind of they spin the aluminium sheet really fast and then push it on. And this big giant guy with a huge kind of lever kind of bends the metal into the shape of the form. And, you know, I said, could you mind with us filming some of the process? Because it's really important for me to show it's kind of made in England. It's authentically done close by. And I said, you know, what's important to me is the actual guy doing it. And, you know, he said, well, the guy, yeah, that's Jeff or whatever his name is, you know. And he said, oh, he really, you know, he'll be really bummed if you're trying to film, stick a camera in his face and all this. And I was like, okay, we stood, you know, far away. After we'd made the first one, I was like, hey, Jeff, you're doing an amazing job. I didn't realize how much effort goes into this. You know, you could see the veins in his neck bulging, he's sweating. It's a lot of hard work. This guy's hands are like, yeah, I've got big hands. His guy's hands are like absolute shovels. But to say to him, hey, look, you know, I'm making these clocks. This is what you're making. And it means a lot for me to come and say hello, shake you by the hand. Thank you for your effort. And I just said, yeah, it means a lot to me. Understand, you know, you're not here to be on a film to be made to look like a performing monkey. I'm here to capture the art of something that is super engineered, has a personal level to it by, you know, what, because I said, you know, Jeff, you could be my friend's granddad and you go home at night and go, hey, you know, I met this guy building these crazy modern clocks and he actually come and said thanks. You know, the amount of times I get a bit of metal, machine it, chuck it in the bit, and then that goes off. I never see what it's made. Nobody, there's no connection. So for me, I made the connection with that person. And yeah, you could see it made his day. You know, the guys at the factory were like, you know, that touched a sweet spot that he was really 100%. Really, you know, happy that, and then he can look at that bit of work and, you know, he can look at photos and go, wow, that was something I had a piece in. And, you know, not, I'm trying to be some kind of saint, but the thing of telling someone, hey, you know what, you've done a great job. That means a lot for me. And, you know, telling the story of these people, they all have a part of it. You know, I'm just one part and I'm effectively the kind of puppet master, but without all of these individual people, the end result doesn't work or make sense. So that yeah, that for me is important. And I just thought it was a nice little story that,
I love it. I love it.
documenting it, it's, I think it is important. And, maybe when I'm a bit older and I'm helping someone else, just have someone say thanks, or, it's a good thing. Anyway, sorry, I'll.
No, it's a beautiful story, and I think it proves besides the story, which is beautiful, I think it again shows you have a very, it seems to me, you have a very you would say it in modern terms, a very mindful approach to what you do. I think there's a lot of awareness about material, conscious design decisions, but also networking with people, the impact your work has for environment, again for people, their emotional impact. So it seems to me you have a very holistic approach, not only in the manufacturing part or creative part, but also on the impact your work has. And I appreciate that a lot, because I think that's part of, or it has to be part of your success. I mean, you could be a perfect craftsman, you could do the same clock, but without the intention you put into it, it's like music, I think. What you said about the AI thing, you can manufacture a thing like this, but with no intention, and I'm pretty sure it would have a very, very different impact. So if we talk about this, is there some kind of guidelines, or did this idea of what it means for you to do this kind of work, the whole intention behind it, all the dimensions of what you talked about, is this something that was clear from the get-go? Is it a sum of your experiences? Is this something that you had within you all the years, or is it not even a conscious thing? Is it like, of course I want to work like this?
I'm going to say that it gets, it's more natural to think about those things. I probably think 20 years ago, when I'm just desperate to make these things, and actually the buzz was, wow, I'm talking to this guy who makes hot rods and he's welding cool stuff, and he's, wow, it's that guy from so and so, and he's welding my chair. And you kind of think, I'm still the kid with the big ambition and the rabbit in the headlights, wow. And you kind of forget, not even to say thank you, because I'd always still be polite, but that's much less of a meaning for me at that point. It's just the wow, I'm in this world. And over time, when you really value people's expertise more and more, because without these people, and actually sometimes you're just mind blown, wow, that technique for that is just, that's unbelievable. And you just think, well, hats off to you. You are the Ronaldo of the kind of machining world, whatever it might be, and but I think in this nowadays, the I use that as an example, because they said, okay, the guy doesn't want to be filmed. And when because he said, I wanted to respect that, but also there's a reason someone doesn't want to be filmed, and he's probably used to a bit of attitude, or whatever it might have been. And I just wanted to say, hey, clearly, hey, look, you know what? I just want to say thanks for your work. It's great. And wow, I'd never imagined it was so much effort. And that kind of broke the ice. And he was like, and then when I showed him the pictures, he was just like, oh my gosh, that is, I can't, I'm so proud to be part of it. And, it's just nice to, it's nice to be nice to people. God, I feel, there's, we've, the world is stressful. We've had a Ukrainian family staying with us. I don't want to kind of go into crazy politics, but and that whole thing just drives me insane. But we've been able to help a family for a year and a half, and that's it's we've got a bit of space, and we were lucky enough, so we're fortunate. Sometimes not everyone it has the ability to help other people, but we have done, and they'll appreciate it. But it's just, sometimes people need a favor or need some help, and I think in this day and age we should do it. There's too much craziness going on, and you just think we're all grown up enough and clever enough now, and there's so much access to, well, we can see you being stupid over there, so stop it. It doesn't, it's greed, and the fact that there's things like, anyway, that detracts from creativity. And I want us all to be happy and have a good time. And
Good
that's
mission.
why I'm here. And I'm
Yes.
having a good time talking to you, Mark. So sorry if I've you know, rambled on a bit, but it's only
because that's what we're here for, Ben. Thank you. I enjoy it too, and I like it when people go off track. That's where you come up with the really good stories. I think not only me but also the sweet people listening have a very clear idea of the welding guy, and I think that's a story we can take away from today, 100%. So Ben, before we wrap this up, I have two or three more questions, quick ones. First of all, before we dive into a more general or holistic approach, talking about what inspiration means to you and where you stay inspired, very hands-on, is there any form of light or lighting that has inspired you or that you were amazed by within the last couple of weeks or months?
You know what? 2 days ago, we were in Val d'Isère riding over a mountain pass, and the snow would come in. We're on a motorbike, it's -4, and you know that is this very flat light, which it kind of looks a bit spooky and ghostly, and it's a bit kind of, it feels a bit scary. The roads are icy. We're on motorbikes. There's no one around. You know, it's like if someone has an accident, it's going to be pretty serious up there. And then, you know, not long after that, the sky cleared, you know, the mountain weather changes really quickly and that blue sky comes out. And for me, it was one of the things like I fell in love with in California. And you mentioned in Italy, you know, it's this rich blue sky that is the epitome of health and happiness on earth, which just radiates this beautiful, warm energy. And, you know, seeing that after the cold of the mountain, you know, it was just, you know, even the hairs on the back of my neck standing up now, imagining how that felt to, oh, the sun's coming out. We've come over the mountain. Everyone's safe. That beautiful light, you know, we're out in nature. You see these mountains and the natural light. I always say, you know, nothing is as beautiful as, you know, in Mother Nature, even, you know, patterns in nature, in a snail shell, or, you know, the way an ice, the fractures in an ice, big block of ice or marble, you know, that just never fails to make me happy and be entertained by. Yeah. So that, I'm not sure I can compare anything else to the beauty of natural light.
I can 100% relate. I did just got me thinking, do you know Olafur Eliasson, the artist that did the big installation in the Tate Modern where he just simulated the sunrise and everything? I think that's just the homage to the same thing you were mentioning, right?
Yeah. I mean, what a clever guy. I mean, his work is, you know, on another level, and that, you know, experience and connection, and yeah, he is absolute hero of mine for sure.
Awesome. So Ben, before we wrap up, there's two questions I ask all of my interview guests. The first one is there something that in general inspires you as a creative, as an entrepreneur, that you want to share with the people listening? Something, it can be a podcast, film, book, whatever it might be.
Is there something that inspires me? I think I'm going to say, you know, my children, the learning, the curiosity that I see with my children inspires me to stay curious, you know, to test things, to test materials, to find stuff out. And that, you know, that almost innocent inquisitiveness of a child experimenting with someone, you know, or let's say even, okay, you know, there's a fire over there, don't touch it, you know, and a child will say, well, what happens if I touch it? You know, that I don't recommend, but, you know, whether you're playing with, oh, how does this snail feel, or whatever it is, you know, because the world is so digital now, and, you know, we are going to be having artificial experiences soon, you know, I think get the kids off screens, iPads, go out, have real adventures, you know, climb trees, play in the dirt, explore with things, you discover things, you know, and that's stay curious, you know, stay inquisitive. So that's my, and connect with nature, because, you know, the more artificial the world gets, the more important it is to hang on to the you know, we are humans from a, you know, with real substance and DNA. And I think that's super important.
Analog experiences. I love it. So that's a double takeaway. Stay curious and connect with nature. I really enjoy that. Thank you so much. And for the last question, Ben, what can we look forward to? I mean, wherever we can find you and your projects, people can find in the show notes. But is there something happening, something coming up, new projects?
So there is. There is something. I've got some work going to a showroom in Los Angeles soon. And there is a, it's a Fred Siegel home store, which is in Malibu. Mm-hmm. And some of that work is available around the world. But there is a new collection where, I won't go too much into it, but it's a personalized experience where if you imagine almost like a fingerprint or so, you're the identity of something that's very personal to one person, I will then, there's a bit of an experience and I will take away a something and return with an artwork made of your something. And it's, I won't give too much more away from that, but it's about these, you know, very personalized artworks with a very deep connection for only one person that I will be making a bit of a song and dance about in the coming weeks. And that is really exciting. And I think that for the right people will be an important piece of work.
Fantastic. We were looking forward to that. Ben, what can I say? It's been a pleasure talking to you. I took away so much, really big inspiration, how you navigate the worlds between commercial projects and artworks, with your passion for holistic experiences and real involvement. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Mark. I've really enjoyed talking to you. Hope the listeners can take something from it that, don't think I'm too crazy, but, it's been very enjoyable talking on the Sweet Spot Studio. So thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.
Hey, sweet people. Thanks for listening to another episode. Thank you, Ben. It's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For me, it was very nice talking to Ben. I take away a lot from this conversation, from his attitude towards money to what he describes as romance with a project. But a sentence that's really gonna stick with me and I think resonates with many creative entrepreneurs is that business is a byproduct of his creativity, which sums up so much of attitude from creatives, from artists who are also entrepreneurs, much of the problems you have to tackle, but also very different perspective on your whole take on how to handle business and your own projects. Sweet people, that's it for today. Hope you enjoyed it. It was a pleasure for me. If you want to learn more about Ben, check out the show notes. If you want to learn more about the studio, brand building and design, if you need some help as a creative entrepreneur, feel free to reach out on sweetspot-studio.com. If you like this episode, leave a like, subscribe wherever you hear this. And yeah, I'll be back soon with more episodes. Take care and I'll see you on the sweet side.
This podcast is produced by Sweet Spot Studio. New episodes each week, wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you enjoyed the show, leave a rating and subscribe to never miss an episode. Find out more at sweetspot-studio.com.